Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist.
And I'm Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist from Louisville, Kentucky. How are you tonight, Laura?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good.
It's we're 1 week closer to me being done with the house.
That's going to be your new opening statement every week now, isn't it?
You got it. Except next week's 100th, so I hope you've come up with that great idea for the 100th show.
Well, I have come up with a good idea, but I don't think we have time to do it, so I'll just have to talk to you about it after the show. I was just talking to Johnny about that, but we'll have to talk about that later. Welcome to the show tonight. It's January 16th, and we're so excited that you decided to join us live. For those of you who aren't, and if you're not live, thanks for listening, even after the fact. We have a couple of great emails to do tonight, but before that, this is the announcement portion of the show. Kate, you're just going to want to go to sleep because I have a lot to say, okay?
That's okay. I'm going to listen up.
All right. I'm very excited that it is finally the week for the Louisville, Kentucky Conference, my hometown conference. Yay! That's this Friday in Louisville, Holiday in Hurstbourne at I-64. You can still sign up for that because we got bumped up to a bigger room. We're going to have a great crowd. And just in case we have terrible weather that day, horrible enough weather for the Jefferson County School System to close down school, the snow date would be the following Friday. February, but it's still January 28th. But the details, if you haven't registered and still want to come, are on the website at teachmetotalk.com, and I would absolutely love to have you. Okay, that's announcement one. Announcement two, I'm going to be at the Kentucky Speech and Hearing Association meeting. We talked about this last week, and I think I said the wrong date. It's Friday, February 11th, and you can look up Kentucky Speech and Hearing Association. Just Google that if you want to get details about that, but it's right outside Cincinnati in the Northern Kentucky Convention Center. And it's just on receptive language. Sorry, I'm getting cues. It's what to say. That morning session is just a morning session on that Friday, and it's different than the regular conference. It's just on receptive language. And I've spent the whole week this week combing through lots and lots of new videos. So I'm so excited to have lots and lots of new video clips to share for that. So that will be exciting, too. Number three, if you are a therapist and want me to come to your state, please email me. I've had a couple email me this week because they heard the podcast last week and my plea for that. And the number one determinant in deciding where we're going to schedule a conference is if I have a direct way to contact providers. And so if you have that information for your state, don't call me. I guess you could call me, but email me would be better, laura@teachmetotalk.com, and let me work with you on that. And again, I appreciate the therapist who've done that this week. The fourth announcement and the next thank you is to all the parents who continue to recommend the website and this show on all those great parenting blogs that are all over the world. So thank you, thank you, thank you for that. And if you ever want to send me an email or Kate and me a little message about that and tell us what blog you've recommended us on, we would love to hear that. And then my last announcement, next to the last announcement. This is the last week of the 3-year anniversary sale for the website at 20% off for any DVD or manual. So go on the website and use that coupon code HAPPY3 to get your 20% off, and that expires next Sunday. And then here's the big announcement. I'm going to start offering a new service from the website, a new parent consultation service that I can Skype with you and talk individually with you about your concerns for your own child. So you'll get really specific recommendations. I won't even go into any more detail than that, but that's up and coming in, hopefully in February. So if you're interested in that, and you know the heart-wrenching letters, Kate, that we get from parents around the world who don't have access to services, I hope that this will be a way to kind of fill in the gap so that they can ask more specific questions than they could email me with or even talk with us here with on the podcast. And, again, hopefully it'll fill the gap for lots of people who aren't able to access professional services or want another opinion or just want some additional specific pointers. Perhaps they've watched the DVD and just feel that they need to talk about it a little bit more. So I'm so excited about that, and I know that's going to be lots of fun, and I'll share details with that as we get that up and running.
Laura just informed me. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, before the show so that I wouldn't say anything inappropriate, but in this case, all I really said was cool, because I think this is a cool idea, and I think, Laura, that it gives you the opportunity. You know, so often when we read the letters, what we say is, well, we don't know, we'd like to ask her, we'd like to ask them or him or whomever, because that the back and forth interaction that you could get from a Skype conference would be so much more relevant and pertinent to what you might say. I mean, we give general information, but when you can say, well, what does he do when he wants something?
Right.
What does
right.
he say for whatever, specific questions related to their individual kids. I think this is a really neat idea. And I think that, like all of your ventures, it will do very well. But I think I've never really heard of it being used that way, but I think it would be a cool thing for you to be able to help families that aren't just here in Louisville or in this meat area. And you get so many international things and,
Right. And it's more private for parents, too, because, sometimes we'll get an email from somebody and they'll say, or I'll invite them to please be on the show and talk with us about it. And they'll say, oh, I can never do that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I think it's a little bit of stage fright, but sometimes it's because they just want to protect their privacy and they don't want the whole world knowing their business. So this would be a way, too, for it to be specific, for it to be private, and then a little more detailed than I'm able to do through email or that we're even able to kind of talk about here on the show. So I'm very excited about it, and again, I'll be sharing more details as we get that up and running. I have some practice families for the next couple of weeks lined up and to work all the kinks out so that when it's truly available, hopefully it will run a little bit smoother than if I just dove right in, which is what I normally do. So I'm glad I have a little bit of forethought on this project, so that'll be good. All right, anything else we need to talk about, Kate, before we get going on these great questions tonight?
I don't know what it would be. We could give the number if you're listening and you want to call in.
Yeah.
We'd love to have you call, whether you wrote an email for tonight or you could be a therapist or a parent or interested listener. So our number, call-in number, is 1-718-766-4332. We'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely. Okay, let's get going with a great letter that I got this week from a therapist. And I'm not going to say her name because, as Kate said when we were talking about this question, she was so forthcoming with information and honest information that we're not going to, again, divulge her name so that we can keep this a little bit private for her. But she did ask some really great questions, and she said some really good things that I know, Kate, that you want to talk about. So I'm going to read the question and then let you have a stab at it first. Okay, here we go. She says, I want to say that your website is amazing, and I recently bought your DVD, Teach Me to Talk, to help me with my work. I'm an SLPA, and that means speech-language pathologist assistant, and that just means that she's gotten her bachelor's degree, but she's not gotten her master's degree yet. She says, I'm working for a private company where I receive little training. I learn everything I know through experience, the web, and some from coworkers. However, I don't believe we have the best therapists working here, so I don't really agree with their techniques. My degree was in psychology, and I've completed an SLPA certification program. However, we don't work with lots of toddlers. I have tons of experience working with normally developing babies and toddlers through extensive babysitting, and she says, I'll still do that today. And then she goes on to say, I need your help. I'm working with a 2.5-year-old. I've tried some of your techniques, but this child throws many temper tantrums and has little attention. He sounds a little familiar to me, Kate. How about you?
Yep. I think I've seen him a time or two.
Yeah, she says, I've been doing bubbles, blocks, being very animated and fun. He can say, uh-oh, and he has maybe five words. He claps. I saw on your website that you should try to get a response such as sign language, and then in parentheses she says, we've been doing more, or the sign for more, after 3 to 5 times, and then give him the toy so as not to upset him. However, with this child, the moment I show him more with my hands, he starts crying and throwing a tantrum. I will try to show him how to do it with his own hands, but he often resists greatly, and he just sits down and gets upset. He's fully capable of signing more. He's done it before. Also, if I show him more with a current toy he is enjoying, he will many times immediately look for another toy to play with to avoid signing. One thing he does do a lot is to grab my hand or his mom's hand to lead us to what he wants. If that doesn't work, he'll get a chair and push it against the counter to get the item. What are your thoughts on that? How much should you let him control his session? Sometimes I start an activity he likes, and then a minute later he wants to do a different activity. Should I allow him to play with the other toy or try to keep his attention on the current activity? She says, I know this is really long. I love working with this age group, but I lack a lot of knowledge, schooling, and experience when teaching language to this age group. I want him to improve, so hopefully you have some suggestions. The majority of the time he's happy in sessions, and his tantrums don't last too long. I can distract him, but just wondering what you think. Thanks. So, woo, we've got nearly a whole show to talk about this. And she asked lots and lots of questions. And, again, I was so excited to get this question because I think it's a situation that all of us, if you've worked for more than a day, have dealt with when working with babies or kids who fall apart a little bit and who you put some pressure, a little bit of pressure, even in a playful, fun, you can do this kind of way. Sometimes that's still so much that they resort to tantrums. So we're going to talk about some ideas. I've already responded to her with some ideas, but I know Kate had some things that she wanted to say as well. So let's just jump right in with that.
Well, first I wanted to say that the reason I didn't want you to leave the portion out where she was so forthcoming was because I just wanted to kind of commend her for taking the initiative to get information elsewhere. I think a lot of times people think that if a therapist is with an agency or a bigger group of, you know, other therapists in whatever capacity, that they're getting all this wonderful training, and they have somebody to oversee them and mentor them. And, of course, sometimes that happens, but I think a lot of times it doesn't happen. And so she, you know, has kind of recognized that some of the therapists don't necessarily represent the type of therapist she wants to be, and she's taking the initiative to not only email us, but, you know, get information wherever she can get it. And I think, obviously, her instincts with young children are very good. That's why she continues to babysit now. And I have my other very highly esteemed friend and speech therapist associate, second to you, Laura, is, you know, Melanie. And she, too, was a lifelong babysitter. And I think that those people who gravitate to lots of babysitting tend to be people who are really very instinctively good with kids. And this girl has that, and her instincts are, even though she lacks, I didn't know there was such a thing as a speech language pathologist certificate program, but because it sounds like she was a psych major. But in any case, she hasn't had much training at all as far as what to do with working on speech and language with young kids. And yet she's in there in the trenches with what sounds like a pretty hard kid already. So she's reaching out and trying to figure out what she can do. And my hat's off to her for having the good instincts and judgment to find out, because she doesn't sound like she's getting too much where she is. So keep at it.
Yeah, I think that was great, too. And a lot of therapists just naturally assume, okay, I should know how to do this. I have those initials after my name, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. I don't really have to pursue other ideas. And I think that's just a mark of a good therapist, when you're constantly looking for ways to be better,
right,
and looking for new ideas and asking for help when you need it, rather than just letting you know, just having disaster after disaster after disaster with the same kid or with lots of kids, when it's obvious that you're struggling and obvious that you need some help to everyone, I think that so many people kind of get caught up in that whole, I'm a master's degree clinician now, and
I'm
I do everything
the professional.
I need to know.
Yes.
Yeah.
I totally
and you,
agree.
You experienced that a lot, Kate, because of not being a speech pathologist, and still you outspeech a lot of the people who have the credentials. And
I did not
they
say that
really...
in case anybody gets some daggers at your training on Friday. That was Laura who said that. That was not me.
But you
yes,
know what I,
I
mean, there are people who really struggle and they don't realize they're struggling, but the team does and the moms do, and they keep getting replaced on kid after kid after kid after kid after kid. And because
and they reduce it to something other than themselves. And instead
right,
of
right.
So this young lady, you know, probably partly because she hasn't had much training and really not an educational background to support. She's had some kind of certification, I guess, but I doubt
right.
it too much. And the truth is, Laura, that's one of the things that I do love about working with young kids is that even when you're a seasoned professional and you've done it for a long, 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 long time, just when you think there isn't a kid that you haven't you haven't conquered or mastered or dealt with, you get some kid that's just somehow in his own or her own unique little way very different. And that's what keeps
right.
it interesting to me. I mean, those kids, early in my career, those kids scared me to death. Now I think, something different. Let's see what we can do with this. But that's the nature
yeah.
of the job. And even for people who've done it, who do have their master's in speech and have done it for 10 or 20 years, just when you think you've got the answer to everything, you get a kid that just doesn't fit into any one of your 50 boxes. You know, you have to
right.
reinvent what it is that's going to work for that child. But this girl, you know, sounds like, she described a specific situation. And
this kind of kid is hard even when you have worked
absolutely.
10 or 20 years. And you will. This will not be the only kid she ever sees like this in her career if she keeps at it, because it happens pretty frequently. And they all are a little bit different with their own little versions of difficulty and their own little things that set them off and what they can handle and what they can't handle. And I so appreciate your comment about that's what keeps this job fun, because you can't really sleep, you know, or get in your automatic pilot. You have to kind of stay on your toes with these little guys, because they can, even though, you know, again, we kind of joked about, I've seen this kid before. They all do their own little variations and have their own little unique personalities and how they act. And then sometimes kids like this are different from week to week to week. And so while something might work one week, it may not work the next week. Or more often than not, while it might work for 5 minutes, it may not work in the next 5 minutes. So you have to keep kind of changing or thinking or tweaking your own approaches and your own ideas and how you present things to make it work on any given day with any given kid. So what would your initial advice be to her, Kate, or do you want me to start with what I've already told her?
I want you to start with what you said, and then I won't repeat that if you read that. So just read
okay.
that, we'll elaborate.
All right. Okay. I said to her, what a predicament. I've worked with tons of kids like this, and honestly, you just have to play it by ear, and I so believe that. And, you know, and I can tell, you know, this particular therapist what I would do on any given day. But, you know, you might go in and see the kid, and one little thing he does might make you think, oh, that's not a good approach at all. Let me try this. So, again, just so if she's listening or other therapists listen and are thinking about this, this really is trial by fire, trial and error. And so even the ideas that we're going to talk about may not work 100% of the time. And again, if you've worked more than one day, you know that. And if you just kind of know about toddlers, you know that too. But these are just some ideas that we would try. I told her to keep pushing the signs and the words, but keep it fun and playful and keep expecting him to do something to get something, because that really teaches intentionality. And he is frustrated because he's wanting to move on so quickly. But just because he's getting upset, I wouldn't stop. I wouldn't stop pushing for those signs and pushing for those words. And you do have to have the balancing act with deciding how much pressure is too much pressure, and you'll know when you've exceeded his threshold of being able to tolerate that. But if you don't keep pushing and don't keep expecting that he has to give you a response, he may not ever do it. You know, and again, this seems like a little guy who is very content to move on. So it sounds like to me she still hasn't found a big enough motivator. So what I would try to do for that is to figure out what he really, really likes. Foods work good with lots of kids, different foods. And so you figure out what his favorite snacks are and use that, because that can be a really fast kind of way to get him to sign. And you give him just one itty-bitty piece like we've talked about in lots and lots of shows. You know, instead of giving him a whole bowl of Teddy Grahams, you would break even a teeny tiny Teddy Graham into two pieces and have him really work. And because he just has to chew three or four times and then swallow it and is ready for the next piece, that's a little, those kinds of turns are naturally built in so that he has to ask for more of that food rather than her taking the toy away. And so it sounded like, based on something that she said, that once she tries to get the current toy that he's with, he just moves on. He doesn't really want it badly enough to try to sign again. So what I would really do is try to find something like a snack that he would naturally want another turn with. And she might have to have 10 different yummy things there. He may, with Teddy Grahams, he might think, okay, that Teddy Graham wasn't that good, I'm going to move on. Then she brings out the Skittles. Then she brings out the cheese balls. Then she brings out, cheese and crackers. Then she brings out whatever. You know, just keep going and talk to his mom about that and get his favorite foods. The other thing that we've talked about before is that some kids who don't respond to food and that with the toys they're not quite motivating enough for them, you might try a movement activity like swinging him in the air or flipping him over or letting him ride on your back, which I don't do in my 40s nearly like I did in my 20s, you know, or any kind of little movement game that you might think that he would like. Because again, kids will who like movement and who have really short attention spans like this little boy sometimes will perform for another turn with a movement activity much more readily than they would with a toy. Because again, with a toy he can just move on to the next thing. And granted, those two ideas might not work, but they work more often than not, don't you think?
Yeah,
with the snacks and with the movement. Yeah.
Well,
and we've talked about that a lot.
Definitely my go-to things with kids who I think are, well, I shouldn't say difficult, but, you know, who have a very short fuse, whether that be from withholding from me or any pushing from me or want to move on for the next toy. And I've certainly had those, lots of those kids who, you know,
me
you
too.
Push them at all, you
yeah.
put any communicative pressure on them, zoom, they're gone. You know, it's a, oops, can't, don't want to do that. So.
And so with those kinds of kids too, I do, and he already has five words, so what I might start with is having him just try to imitate one word that he already has because it's already established. And so she didn't say what his five words are, and those might be totally unrelated to anything that she could use in therapy. But if you already have an established response, instead of going for something new, you might try something that he's already really familiar with. So if one of his words, you know, happens to be ball and he likes ball, get the coolest ball you can find, like one of those flat balls, and try with that, because again, that's something familiar with him and it's not introducing something new. She said he's fully capable of doing the sign from work, that she's seen it, but you know, a lot of times kids like this do have underlying motor planning issues, and so sometimes it looks like behavior, and I'm not saying it's not. Some component of this is not behavior, but if he could really do it all the time, you would see it more than you're seeing it. So you still want to stay in teaching mode. And for kids like this, Kate, I bet you do the same thing. When they're resistant to do it, I just grab their hands and make them do it and then celebrate like they did it on their own and give them the toy or give them the snack or do the whatever. And then even if I have to keep doing it and doing it and doing it, sometimes after that 30th time, they go ahead and beat me to it if I am fun enough and it's what we're doing is still keeping their attention. And again, sometimes you have to do that hand-over-hand piece, even on kids that you think he could do it if he wanted to. You have to maybe, you know, just try a little harder with and give him a little benefit of the doubt there and think, well, maybe he still can't do it completely voluntarily yet, so I'm going to go ahead and help him and provide that tactile cue. And again, sometimes you have to just really celebrate, and it might make him mad. That might make him even madder, you know, and you'll just have to judge that on your own, too. But I, with kids like this, I still do a lot of hand-over-hand if it doesn't make them too mad, because I have to think on some level he still may not be able to purposefully do that yet. And again, he's getting mad, and so you have to wonder if some of that isn't. Some of it probably is that two-year-old behavior, but some of it might be, this is hard for me and I can't do it just yet. All right, your thoughts.
My thoughts. The first thing I would say is to kind of go on record as saying, how do I want to put this? A little bit of squawking. She kind of says two things. At first, she kind of describes them as throwing lots of tantrums, and he really comes unglued. And then at the end, she says, but he's actually pretty happy. And he does throw some tantrums, but he can be distracted. And, you know, they're, so you know what I mean? So I kind of got a little bit of a mixed message from her as far as how difficult. And that's, to me, very important. As I've done this job longer with kids who are very, part of that is he's being forced to give a response. And this is probably a child who really hasn't been forced to do that. And that does make kids mad. You know, particularly when they're two and a half and he's gotten everything he wanted and some he didn't want, but he didn't have to do anything to get it. You know, somebody handed him his drink and handed him his cookie and handed him the toy, and he didn't do anything really to even indicate he maybe wanted it. But in any case, so, it, you know, some of it's behavioral, if you want to call it that. I guess the first thing I'd say is if it's the actual situation is more, as she describes at the end of her letter, about, you know, it's not horrible, we have moments, but he moves on pretty quickly as far as the tantrums and whatnot, I'd say, well, okay, that's okay. A couple minutes or a minute or two, if that. I mean, I certainly have had lots of kids who, you know, you go in there and, yeah, you're doing your best to be fun, but you do have some requirements for him to participate. You want him to sign. You want him to reach or indicate in some way that he wants what you have. And there are certainly kids who really balk at that. And as I've done it longer and longer, I've become a little bit hardened to that. One thing I do now that I know I didn't even do probably 2-3 years ago is I point blank will say to a kid, oh, that's silly. What are you fussing about? I mean, I just put it out there.
Yeah.
I'm like, get real.
Call
that's
on
ridiculous.
It. Yeah.
I do. And you know, it's funny. Kids kind of seem, even if they don't really comprehend what I'm saying, I guess it's my approach, my demeanor, my body language, whatever message they are able to receive, they seem to kind of get it. That Kate, she's fun, but she doesn't really care if I throw a fit. Just, you know, I never, ever knowingly and intentionally push a kid to the point where it's a total meltdown, because that's a wasted session. But a minute of squawking or 10 seconds or 15 or whatever seconds of squawking, whatever. You know, I mean, I just kind of, and I, go ahead.
And it's probably a different response, too, than they've gotten from a mom who might scurry to that, who might hear that little fuss and think, ooh, I better get moving here. I don't want to have a full-blown meltdown. And they see you just kind of laughing it off, like, you can cry if you want to, buddy, but it's not really going to matter. And again, you're still being fun and you're still being nice, but at the same time, you're letting them know, okay, that doesn't really bother me.
And I hate to really kind of say that, Laura, because I've heard other therapists who are those that I've crossed paths in the past who really don't care if the kid cries for the hour.
But that's not what you're saying.
No.
That's not
no.
what you're saying. You're teasing when you're doing it,
right.
And you're making a joke of it, like, what are you doing that for? In
right.
a very funny kind of, what is that, rather than cry if you want to.
Right,
you know,
you buy gum, you're
and
going
I did,
to do it.
And I'm yeah. glad you clarified that, because I don't want people to think, I just know you, and I know how you're using it, which would be exactly the same way that I would do it, too. But the... I just know your personality with that you're going, you know, what is that? You know,
right.
I haven't heard you do that before, and
that's
it's a joke.
Silly. I usually
rather
say
than,
that,
yeah.
And then kind of yeah. laugh and move on.
Right.
So
right.
that would be my first thing on that. The other thing would be to caution her against that, and you kind of alluded or went with this, Laura, that she's saying, he can do it, I know he can, as far as signing
right.
more. And
because
I really,
a lot of kids can't. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I just as I go with this theory on kids talking, because, you know, I hear lots of parents and sometimes even therapists say, well, he said more earlier, he said more yesterday, and now he
right.
won't. And I really decided a long time ago that we can't really change what the kid does. All we can really change is what we're doing to elicit the desired response. So I go
right.
more with, I'm not doing whatever this kid needs in order to be either able to or motivated enough to sign more.
Right.
So because
right.
that we can affect, you know, as far as, and I don't believe, just as I believe that with apraxic kids, sometimes they can say more, but then maybe five
right.
minutes later, they can't say more, even if they really, really want to say more. And I think that
right.
a child who's as language delayed as this kid, I'm not saying he's apraxic, but, you know, he's 2.5 and 5 words, and it doesn't sound like those are terribly consistent. So probably there is some motor planning component to his delay, you know, because
exactly.
he's not really a big – anyway – so my point to her would be, and it's just something you have to kind of put in your mindset and remind yourself about regularly. Sure, there are times I think, you little stinker, I know you can do this. But what I try and think is, you little stinker, I know you can do this, so I'm going to make it so desirable to you that you do it.
Right.
Or so.
Yeah, exactly. And that's not yeah, that's that whole can't versus won't thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about that here, and I don't know if she's read that article on the website with that, but there's a whole kind of philosophical shift that parents and therapists have to make, because when we treat everything like behavior, and again, she's a psych major, Kate, so she really might kind of have that... have that natural inclination to look at that. But when you treat everything like behavior, then you end up having power struggles. And
I
that
was
no
a psych
fun.
Major way back when. She needed to take
I
her.
I guess,
yeah.
I always forget about that. I just forget about
but
that.
But I know what you're saying. It would be more like a psych major to think, oh, this is a behavioral. What can we do to modify? And then if she wants to think, even if she does think it's a behavior, then she needs to think again about what she can do to alter
right.
behavior, you know, because
yeah.
you can't reason with a 2-year-old. So all she can do really is try, as I said, to elicit the desired response. But to think, I know he could, he just won't, doesn't really inspire her to up the ante, somehow entice him more fully, because I do really, you know, I like to talk about my altered levels of arousal. You know, he has to be really mad, really excited, or really scared. Really excited
uh-huh.
is what we go with, you know, because that's the most
right.
pleasant. And it doesn't sound like, you know, she's holding that or maintaining that or eliciting that really excited response consistently enough. And when she gets more comfortable and that comes more readily to her, I think he'll be signing more and more consistently.
I think so, too. And the other thing is, and I think this is what you're saying, too, he's moving on because she's not keeping him hooked mm-hmm. with whatever they're doing. And so she's got to manage that a little bit better. And again,
right. and
sometimes
that's hard,
you have to really fake that. Yeah.
Extremely hard with kids who present like this little guy does. You know, short attention
right.
span, very sensitive to touch. You know, there he has lots of factors that make him a little bit harder. No, probably a lot harder. He'll be a
right.
great teaching kid for her. You know, she will be a better therapist when she gets this little guy's number. So
exactly, and she'll be able to use some of those same ideas. The other thing that she should do is control her environment a little bit better. And
mm-hmm.
I've told her this in my response, and I didn't talk about it. But if he moves on so quickly, she needs to not have so many different things there. And, you know, again, both of us wag the big toy bags in our sessions, but you need to either put it somewhere where he can't get it and doesn't necessarily see it, like maybe you're working with him and you have it right outside the door to your room, or I've even left toys on the porch before and just gotten one thing out at a time when a kid is so used to moving on to something else, then you kind of establish that whole, this is the beginning of the activity, the middle of the activity, and the end of the activity, and it's not as easy then for him to get the toys. If it's a house with a lot of baby gates, you know, play there and stick the bag on the other side and maybe push it off so it's not quite as visible so that he doesn't get upset by that. But when you remove the opportunity for him to move on, he may not move on quite as often, and that's just, I mean, and again, you have to play that by ear with kids. She might need to work in a smaller space with him. When kids are like this and they're really active and they really want to move on, I try to kind of almost corner them. And again, not in a real obvious way so that he immediately kicks into fight or flight. But if you have a smaller space that you can work with, that he doesn't have quite so many options for running away, and that's not to say that you're going to sit there and act like, okay, buddy, you know, this is it as far as play with me or else. It just means that you're still going to be fun, but you're and you still do everything you can to entice him to want to interact with you and engage with you, but at the same time you kind of limit the opportunities for him to leave or move on by having less space and fewer toys or fewer options right there, right at the beginning. And she's still going to need those options because it sounds like he can't play with something for a very long time. She just doesn't need it where he has access and is able to get to the next thing as soon as she kind of ups the ante and wants him to give her some kind of response. But it's a great question. And if therapists
right.
are listening and haven't had this kind of kid, you will.
Not like she's getting them pretty early. Yeah. Well, and I do that too, Laura. I mean, I know you've seen kids in closets and narrow hallways,
yeah.
and, we go to the home generally, so we work with what we have. And sometimes it is something as simple as, you know, like she said, we carry in big bags, and I might put my big bag zipped up on one side of a kid, maybe stretch out my leg on the other side of the kid so that we kind of have a more confined space, and I don't ever, you know, trap him in there so that, nope, you're staying, and he's throwing a fit, and I'm saying, too bad, this
yeah.
is our therapy
mm-hmm.
spot.
Yeah.
But just kind of, you know, these kids, I call them scattered kids, one thing after another, fast, 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 fast. They're all excited, and they want to go from the next thing, and you're trying to slow them down just a little bit so they have time to absorb something. The more stuff that they can see, the more stuff that they have access to, the more likely they are to be that much more scattered. So if she can kind of
right.
create a corner of the room that is separate from, I don't know what her particular spot looks like, but, you know, definitely get the additional toys out of his line of sight, out of his reach, if she can do that. On the other side of the door would certainly work. I've had lots
or just putting the bag behind her. I mean,
mm-hmm.
don't you put the bag? I put my
always.
Bag
always.
Really
I don't
the
really
time
let
them
have access to the bag. Certainly not
and
a child like this. No.
Yeah, and you really can use your body to do that. Put the bag of toys right behind you and get your legs, you know, in a V, sit on the floor. So you've at least got a shot of blocking him when he tries to get to it with a leg or with an arm. And again, not in a really mean, oh, no, you don't kind of way, but just like, come on, we're going to do this. We're playing this. You have the puzzle. And so you're still keeping it fun with your voice. You're still doing everything you can to make him want to be with you so that he can learn from you, but at the same time you're controlling that access a little bit with your body. And if he is really active, you know, he really might like some of that roughhouse stuff too. And with those kids, don't you do that, Kate? As they're going for the bag, boy, I think, okay, I'm going to grab you and slam you down, or
oh yeah,
you know,
yeah,
wrestle with
something.
You, or
make you,
you know,
do a
you
can
have it a fun
yeah,
night,
something,
yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, to keep you from getting to that bag, to give you some kind of other little movement thing that makes you still want to stay with me, but ultimately I control when the next toy is going to come out.
Right.
You know, and you have to, and again, it's a balance. It's not the whole mean, you know, you don't, you have to play with this for a set amount of time, because I let kids like this still move on pretty quickly with the whole theory that we're going to do it one more time or one more turn. Because
particularly in
really
the beginning,
because
I, sorry.
Yeah, well, go ahead. You just can't force them to do it for 15 or 20 minutes. And the truth is, I don't even want to play with a toy that long with that kind of kid. It's torture.
Right. And, you know, for all the therapists, and they're out there, I literally heard one say it in my presence. It doesn't matter if he's crying. He's still learning. And I to this day, that was many years ago. And I thought, yeah, he's learning to hate therapy. That's what he's learning.
Yeah.
He is not learning what
he's learning.
You're trying to yell over his crying, his screaming fit. This was a kid who presented a lot like the boy she describes. He was hard. You know, he was very sensitive and very quick to protest. So.
Well, and Dr. Greenspan, Stanley Greenspan, who is was the autism go-to guru in our country, talks a lot about this in his books, and he says that when a child is tantruming like that, he's out of control, and that means he really can't control what he's hearing, what he's seeing, how he's responding. He can't do that, so you have to get him regulated and stop what you're doing and not count on him to be able to process and understand and quote-unquote obey, for lack of a better word, because he can't. The tantrum means I'm out of control here. I need some help getting back to baseline. And so the whole let him cry it out, he's learning anyway, blah, 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 that's not really true. Maybe with an 8 or 9 year old, and I don't even think so then.
I don't.
But surely
I know
not
when
with a 2 year old.
No, when I'm stressed, whether it's because I'm freezing or I'm hungry, or I mean, I don't throw an all out fit, but I'm gone. You know what I mean? I am not really attending to what's in front of me. I'm thinking, I've got to eat, or I've got to get a jacket on. You know, just as a kid who's crying.
Well, or even when you're so mad, or even when you're that mad. You know, and there are times, thankfully, as adults, not as often as it happens with a 2 year old, but there are times when you're so mad that in the South, as we would say, you can't see straight. And it's the truth. You can't. You are really beyond where you're able to respond normally. And that's how our babies are when we're doing that. And I'm with you. I don't think that you can pursue that. I think you need to just stop, move on. She's already using distraction, which is what we know is the only really valid disciplinary behavioral behavioral technique for kids under 2 is distraction and redirection. None of that other stuff works until you're developmentally over 2. And she knows that, thank goodness, and she says she can distract him and move on, but that's perfect. That's perfect. That's exactly how she should respond to that, because he's not able to do it himself. And I rarely, and probably more like never, have seen a kid actually recover and say the word, you know, within the whole 10 seconds that the person is saying, you better do it or else, or, you know, having the cry if you want to attitude. You know, just kids can't respond verbally like that. They just can't.
No. Once they've, a squawk, a squeal, a brief cry, okay, but not when they've really gone to the over-the-edge spot. It's like
when it's a full-blown tantrum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing,
and I really
Laura,
try not to let kids get there.
Oh, I try really, really, really hard.
Yeah.
I mean, not to say it doesn't ever happen, but it doesn't happen much, because I figure out pretty quickly what are the real triggers, and I avoid
it. Me too. And I don't do it. Yeah.
Right. If
because
I can
only have an hour there.
Do it, The other thing I would say to her, and again, this is not a foolproof thing. All these things sometimes work and sometimes don't, because each kid is really different. But with kids, I've had kids certainly that they see that more sign and they do what she describes. They get mad. One thing I'll do is, and this sounds kind of goofy, but I have had it work on some kids. Not every child, but some. I'll get less predictable, more animated with just even signing more. You know, I might go, more, and pull my hands together at that time and kind of really exaggerate the sign. I change it up, you know, so that I kind of catch them a little bit off guard with, oh, she's not just doing that darn more thing again. You know, you are still signing more, but you're somehow altering your delivery so that he's a little off guard. He's a little thinking, oh, I didn't really expect that one.
Yeah.
And I've had some kids who, you know, kind of go from being, I'm going to throw a fit, she's signing more, to kind of laughing or giggling or getting a little twinkle in their eye when I do it weird or I do it different or I exaggerate it or I, you know.
Right.
And I think, huh, it worked. Just a simple change in her delivery may kind of soften his response, because he'll be thinking, huh, she doesn't usually do it that way. You know?
Yeah, that was kind of funny.
Yeah, that was kind of funny.
She could do that. She could switch signs, too, which is what I do, too. If a kid has gotten really negative, and this happens all the time, too, with kids kids that tune out a mom when they call his name, then I'll say, well, don't do that anymore. Try another word like hey or look or see or something that doesn't elicit that response. If a kid freaks out with no, you know, the second he hears no, you try not to say it. You try to do something else, you know, use another word for that. So he might have gotten so conditioned to that, you know, just immediately going to, I'm not going to do that, and real negative, she might try another easy early sign like please, or again, just whatever she, you know, I don't know what she's signing for. If it's, I would switch to the food signs. I hope for her sake that he's an eater, because I would really switch to that. And if he has done an approximation of more in the past, he can probably get that little hand open and do cookie.
It is amazing how sometimes if you'll break out snacks, those kids who are giving you the deer in the headlight look or balking in some way and not giving you the desired response, if you get out the fish crackers or the Oreo baby cookies or whatever, they can't. Yeah. And, you know, is that, and I see, is it, well, they just, then they wanted to. If you want to look at it that way, I guess you could say that. I would say you had him in the right place. You got him excited.
And it's motivating enough.
Right.
You've got to find his motivators, because there are lots of things. You know, that's why we get paid to go to work. We, you know, I love my job and you love your job, and so we can't really use our jobs, but say someone else. That's why you wouldn't take a job. You know, you're going to think, okay, that job would not do that job unless I got paid X amount of money. You know, that's the right currency. That's the right amount. And so that's what you have to think about with kids, too. You have to find out what their threshold is, what their currency is. And it sounds like to me she really hasn't found it with this kid. Now, there are some kids that you have to look really, really hard to find something that they want badly enough to perform for. But I don't, you know, it doesn't sound like she's really gotten there yet. And she's doing all the right things, starting with the visual toys that we talked about, bubbles. What else did she say? Blocks. Unless she's letting him build a tower and knock it over, blocks are kind of boring.
Yeah, I kind of wondered about that block reference, too. I don't know. I like my Tupperware blocks open. But, again, that's not just, if it's just kind of one of those big Duplo.
Duplo,
you know, the stackable kind of big Lego type box. What?
Yeah. Boring.
Yeah.
You get a kid
who really loves it, but he's so kind of hyper-focused on it that he's going to get mad. You know, I just don't have much success with stacking blocks.
And the only reason that I think that I do have more success with that is we're only stacking them up so they can knock them over or
right.
kick them over or something like that. And that, he probably would like that. And sometimes you have to just get two or three little blocks before they're ready to do it. But she might have him sign for more or please or even a little kick with his foot. You know, she's you know, can say, you got to show me how to kick and let him do it, you know, in the air and then kick the blocks. Anything where she's going to get him doing something to get something. And again, with those kinds of kids, you can kind of push them over the edge sometimes with, you know, 25 kicks of those blocks in a row, and you've got to kind of balance it. And it is kind of a non-traditional way to play with those blocks. His mom might not like that, but it may be just fun enough for him to want to respond rather than just sitting and using blocks in a really traditional, boring way. So she might need to change how she does that too. And she said she has the DVD, so she's able to look at some examples of using that. And I'll just say too, a lot of the kids on the DVD, I'm always surprised when people say, I love that you don't show the perfect therapy session, because I think, man, the kids on the DVD are as close to perfect as it ever gets with a two-year-old. Because I mean, we have kids that I, you know, I can't even film because they're really hard as far as sitting in one place and doing something for more than 30 seconds or whatever, and that's just the nature of the game. And so she's able to see some really nice longer play sequences on the DVD with fun toys. And you don't have to run out and buy exactly all those same toys, but you do need to make sure that what you're using is novel enough and exciting enough that a kid would want to play. It always cracks me up, Kate, when you talk about, you know, I'm seeing this kid and the other therapist seeing this kid, and apparently all she'll take in is a book and a puzzle, you know, and she's, you know, she's not
getting.
Yeah,
they have a little tiny satchel, you know, with two little things, three little things, and I have my huge duffel bag and three other additional auxiliary bags and my snack bag, and, you know, I look ridiculous. They look like they have a sense, but, you know, little wonder that they don't find her as exciting as they find me. I mean, you know.
Right.
The other thing I'd say about this, and she doesn't really say, or I didn't get an idea really, is how well this little guy does play on, you know, even if he's left to his own devices. We don't really know, is this a child? Because really a lot of kids who we get, whether they're 2.5, that's a little older than we typically get, but somewhere around 2, a lot of them, or some, really aren't good players. And by that I mean they really like kind of stimmy toys where they press a button, they press a button, they press a button, and the lights go and the music goes, and that's what they do. Or they may be allowed to watch lots and lots of television at home and they're completely mesmerized by the TV, but they don't really know how or show much interest or aptitude, frankly, in playing with toys functionally. You know, you give them a baby doll, they couldn't care less. You give them whatever, you know, variety of toys, they just don't, they haven't stop to figure it out, and nobody's really either tried or been successful anyway in encouraging them to stop and really play. You know, whether it be with a ball ramp toy where you bang it with the hammers and they go down. You know, I always start with pretty low as far as
simple toys.
Yeah, simple toys with a big visual payoff, things that I can control. And Laura, you have, or soon we'll have a whole manual about what toys work, what you do with them, what do you do when they don't. Well, I don't want to say what your book is, but it's all about playing and playing with toys and how
to use them. Well, that's it, yeah.
So in a little while,
well,
buy that book.
Well, and you make a good point about you have to start with things that they can already kind of do, but that are fun.
Right.
And so when you look at kids like this and you think, okay, he doesn't have lots of functional play skills, you know, no way is he ready to play something pretend, like with the farm and the animals and stuff yet, because he's still really kind of cognitively and play skill-wise back at cause and effect.
Not at all ready
for solving.
Right.
Yeah, and so you have to pick toys that are, again, on his level, but that are fun, that will attract him and make him want to sit for more than 5 seconds. And so the new book is going to be about all that. Who knows when that's going to come out? I was shooting for first of the year, but now that's come and gone. And I have all these other things going on too. But there's another, there's kind of the article that the book is based on is on the website, and it's back on the homepage. It's at teachmetotalk.com, and I put it up there for Christmas. It's under the recommended toys and techniques article, and I think the article has a little picture of blocks or something right beside it. But it really talks about what toys that we found that are winners and how to use those toys, and gives you some ideas for that, and you can use that until the book comes out. But the new book is about starting at the beginning with play with a lot of those kids, and it really, for a lot of kids, it's way back at cause and effect and object permanence, and again, those really simple toys that somebody might say, my goodness, he's 2 and a half. He's not going to want to play with that. That's where you have to start. But again,
yeah,
you have to.
He won't like bubbles, and they love bubbles, you know. So.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you have to start with that. And again, if he is doing okay with the bubbles and you think, okay, he is pretty visual, you're going to want to think about that when you play in your therapy sessions with him, and want to make sure that everything's got that little visual payoff for him. It's going to be something cool that he can look at. We use those little games, that fishing around game, a lot, because the fish swim in that circle. And that's a round and round kind of thing. The ball toys are great for that. The little swirly Fisher-Price spiral racetracks have that visual effect, but it's mm-hmm. really easy because you push the lever and the cars go down the swirlies. That's a really fun toy to start with. So she may want to examine what kinds of materials that she's using as well, so that he wants to stay with her a little bit more. But hats off to her for sending the email and for asking for help and for looking for things on her own beyond her education and beyond even what her company is offering her in the way of training. So she has all the markings of a good therapist already, because she's really looking for solutions.
Yes, I see a bachelor's in speech
kids.
Language pathology for her. How about you? She needs to make some money so she can pay for grad school, because she'll make, she'll be a great speech language pathology assistant, but she may need to just go on and become the real thing, because your instincts are great.
I think so.
And she's willing and able and eager to learn, so she's going to be out speeching the speech therapist pretty quickly, if she's not already.
Yeah, and she could be. She could be. And we're not meaning to slam therapists. I hope anybody that's listening aren't thinking, oh, my goodness, they're so awful. They're bashing other people. We're not saying that. We're just saying things. You know, we really admire professionals who say, gosh, I need some help with this kid here, rather than it just, again, not being very much fun for the kid, and they're not being very successful, and ultimately it's that kid who suffers and everybody on their caseload, because they're not realizing there's a better way to do this. I could get better results, and this kid, you know, I'm it. He's depending on me, so I've got to get better so that he can learn what he's supposed to learn, as opposed to having a disaster of a therapy session week after week, after month, after month, after month. They're wasting time. They're wasting that kid's time. And so I always appreciate the therapists who realize that and who say there's got to be another way to do this, versus one who might think that there is no other way to do it and that's just how kids are and that this is just what happens.
Or he's
so
just
again,
bad or difficult or spoiled. Or. And you know what? Some of that could be true, but the fact is she still needs to get the most she can get from her hour. So,
exactly.
You know, she can't really change any of that, but she can change what she's doing, and that will help change his responses. So,
and learn some new stuff, yeah.
Right.
So, again, we're not slamming therapists. We don't want it to be about that. We just want it to be about making it better so that those kids ultimately will benefit. All right, I think we're at the end of the show.
And we only got one question. I knew this would be a long one. It had lots of facets to it.
You said that from the beginning.
Yeah.
Well, you said from the beginning, we're only going to be able to do that one the whole hour, Laura. Don't even plan another one. And I did plan another one, but we will just handle that next week on show 100.
Oh, you're going to have to tell me what the big surprise is.
Well, it's not going to be a big surprise because we don't have time to do it. But I'm not even.
You're going to have to let me help you
talk
decide whether that we have time to do it, because I don't know what it is yet. So, maybe
well,
we can modify
I've got a big week coming up this week, so
you
I don't think I'm going to have time to do it.
Oh, Okay. That's legitimate.
Well, we'll see, but maybe we'll have some callers. That would be wonderful. That would be wonderful. If anybody wants to call, especially, and this is kind of my idea, I wish that I had thought about this weeks ago so that I could have tracked down moms that we previously had on the show or previously read their emails to say, how is your kid doing now? Update us. What happened? And so if any moms or therapists that you've called or written in or and you've got some success stories, we would love to share those next week on our 100th show. But again, I don't really have time to do lots of extra digging through the email files and listening to old shows to figure out even who to try to track down. Just thought about that a couple months ago, but honestly, I don't even know if I would have had time then. So there you go.
But if you're listening, you could spontaneously call in. Because we'd love to hear from, and even if it wasn't, because you know what, like I said, none of our things are 100%. Even if we made a, or I made a
right.
suggestion, and you realize, oh, that didn't work, but you figured out something that did work, we'd love to hear that too. Just an update.
We are open to new ideas more than anybody, because we...
I love new ideas.
No,
it may be the one thing that'll work. Yeah, I mean, and that's
yeah,
what
with our next quirky kid.
Why this
yeah.
young gal has a potential to be a great therapist, because she recognizes that and she's eagerly looking for things that'll work. And guess what? Even when she's been doing it 10 years, she's going to get a kid that she thinks, oh no, now what? Now what am I going to do?
But you won't be scared in this. But it won't be the same kind of scared. You know, like when
no,
you first
but
start
Laura,
working,
even
you, think,
you
oh,
and I
gosh.
Sometimes will run across a kid that we think, woo.
Yes.
No, this
and that's
kid
exactly
challenges
what you said,
all
though.
Of my all of my things, and you just have to
but
troubleshoot until you figure it out.
Yeah. But it's a challenge then, and we're like, you know, and again, it's always like, I am going to figure out what makes you tick. I'm going to get you.
And there is
so
no more bigger reward. There's no bigger reward than, and she'll feel this when she has her first great hour. You know, when she gets five signs and 10 words and or vice versa, she, you know, she ups the ante on him a lot and he responds. She will be walking on air all day long. And it's
exactly. Or when that mom says to her, oh, my gosh, I cannot believe he did that for you.
Yeah.
You know, she will really feel, even if she doesn't get it, that verbal praise, although I hope she does get it. She didn't say a word about the kid's mom. So I wonder how that's going. We didn't even go there. But I do hope she gets some good success in the next couple of months so that she can feel really good about it. But, again, even if she doesn't, the fact that she's trying makes her so far ahead of the game. And I just absolutely love to hear from therapists like that. So that's
oh, wait,
great.
Wait, wait, Laura. There was one more thing I wanted to say to her specifically that I don't know that you put in your written response, and I know I didn't say it tonight. One thing we didn't mention, and this may work, may not, try some music, try some songs, try some, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
We didn't ever go there. Some of those kids who kind of sound kind of similar to him, if you'll sing them something, well, you know, sometimes I make it up, sometimes I go with something I know. You know, wouldn't surprise me if he were a kid who got that twinkle going when you started singing some little silly song and something
yeah.
you can win them over pretty well with that. Those kids who are sensitive to touch, sensitive to auditory stuff, somehow music is a different animal and they really respond positively. So, Laura, you have, that is your first manual, which is called what?
Teach Me to Play With You. And she can look at that on
yes.
Yeah, Teach Me to Play With You, and she can look at that on the website. The other thing, and this little game is in there with those kinds of kids, that little ah, boom game, Kate, where you raise
right.
your hand to go ah, boom, and then you hit the floor or hit the couch or hit the table or whatever. I use that as a distractor all the time. Kids fall over laughing. They think that's so funny. Even when they're just about to, you know, you get them right before they're about to cry or right before they're about to pitch a fit, you kind of introduce that. And I don't know why that responds so well to little boys who are highly distractible.
They love
and,
things that boom, that's why. Even
yeah.
if your arm's going, ah, boom. Yep.
Yeah, and it's fun and it's funny. and it's an easy motor movement for him to try to imitate and perform with you, and then you could say, you know, then turn it into, ah, boom, you show me, ah, boom. And he's, you know, at that point kind of, and that's the same kind of thing we do for signing, you know, that's the same thing. It's getting them to do a motor gesture on request or on command, so that might be something that she would want to look at too, and that's in Teach Me to Play with You. And again, that's on sale, but only for another week. So if you need that, hurry and order
all
it.
All those things that you have in to Teach Me to Play with You, they're really all about establishing a social connection with that child.
Right.
And I'm guessing this kid doesn't have much. You know what I mean?
Probably
just from what she
yeah.
says, I
not suspect great.
Not great. And but she needs to establish and build on that, because then she'll have his trust. She will have won him over, and he's not going to balk it so much. He's going to trust her more implicitly and respond more positively. So maybe getting rid of some of those toys and doing more of that stuff initially, so that she's got him. You know, he knows she's
right.
fun. He knows she wants to play with her. Is
and those little games, ride a little horsey, ring around the rosies, row your boat, all of those little fun games. And you can make them as movement-oriented as you need them for those kinds of kids. I mean, Kate, don't you really jump around the rosies or run around the rosies?
Absolutely. And I routinely interject those things into when I lose a kid,
yeah.
whether the kid's
Me
so
too.
Busy and scattered moving from thing to thing, or he gets so darn into the play that he wants me nowhere around him and he doesn't want me to join him. You know, I mean, you have one or the other extreme
yeah.
oftentimes. And when I get either of those, either he's so scattered and busy that he won't stay for more than 10 seconds, or he's totally engrossed in the toy and won't look at me, won't respond to me, I put the toys up and I go to those things, because that's where you get
mm-hmm.
them socially. And I think that's got to be the foundation for any communicative exchange, is you're socially connected. And some of those kids just really aren't very socially connected. So got to teach
right.
that too,
so
really.
She's got, yeah, and he probably fits that profile because he's a leader. She said that he takes mom's hands,
uh-huh.
and I wonder, does he realize mom's face is up there connected to that shoulder and neck and arms? You know, sometimes it's just about the big hands. You know, I know the big hands are doing
yeah.
it for me. Yeah.
It's a different
so
kind of lead.
So she needs to kind of look at that too. Yeah. Yeah, and that's
yep.
their only trick. That's their only gesture, and that's when
mm-hmm.
you start thinking, aha, yeah. Okay, we're pretty over, but that's okay. And I hope I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, well, anyway.
Well, Laura, I know you'll have a great conference on Friday, and I will be there in attendance, so don't call me out. I'll be incognito.
Well, I can't make any promises. We'll see.
Okay, just remember
right,
that 100 show next
gonna...
Sunday. Okay, talk to you soon. Thanks.
All right, talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.